This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
A one-time Democrat candidate for president has left the Democrat Party. Tulsi Gabbard renounces Democrats. Two, Will's weekly quarterback depth chart and a quarterback who will soon be lighting up the NFL. Three, the propaganda attack on your mind is in full force. An absolute assault for your brain and soon your bank account. It's the Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up and welcome to Wednesday. As always, I hope you will download, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your audio entertainment, at Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. A big episode of the Will Cain Podcast today with two big stories. But first, a big moment I missed. Last week, my two brothers and my stepdad managed to score tickets to the second-to-last game of the season for Major League Baseball. The Texas Rangers were hosting the New York Yankees. And while that game was relatively meaningless to the teams, it was meaningful to one Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge had been sitting on 61 in pursuit of Roger Maris's American League home run record and a claim to the only clean title in the home run race. All the other names ahead of Aaron Judge at that point, other than Maris, had careers and records tainted by the use of steroids. Sosa, McGuire, Bonds. Judge sat on 61 for about a week, and it just so happened to align that he could break the record on the night that my family and I went to the ballpark. And we did go to Globe Life Park in Arlington. It was a fun night. It was my brother's birthday, and he had special tickets that carried along with it a stadium club pass. I saw the stadium club as we entered the stadium. My brother said, yeah, we can go in there. Free food, prime rib, free beers. I perked to attention. Free? Yeah, free. They'll also deliver hot dogs and popcorn and beers to our seats as well. But in there's where you get the prime rib. Okay, and we walked to our seats. We got into the stadium about, I would say, 25 minutes early before the first pitch. And as you stood in the stadium, it was still somewhat empty. And nothing really in my consciousness said, hurry up and sit down. I did know that Aaron Judge was batting leadoff so that he'd get as many at-bats as possible to break the record. But nothing in my mind set off alarm bells. In fact, the only thing in my mind said, empty stadium, we got here early, prime rib. So I said, let's go eat. Let's go to the stadium club. My brother said, why don't we go in the fourth inning? I said, that's a terrible idea. Why would we leave in the middle of the game? Let's get it done before the game. He submitted. I won. Thus is the nature of things when you're the oldest of four. We went to the stadium club, met my stepdad, had a beer, went through the line. Prime rib, highly overrated. I think they pulled it out. The line was so long before it was fully cooked. The center, like the marbled fat in the middle, was definitely cold and possibly frozen. Still, there was pizza and chicken and whatever else you might want. A couple rounds of beers. And before you know it, we looked up and the stadium club had cleaned out. And the big Jumbotron televisions inside the stadium club had piped to life. And the game was beginning. There was a pitcher who I had never heard of for the Rangers, I think Jesus Tinoco, on the mound, and there, at home plate, was Aaron Judge. Now, we have a game time decision. It's time to call an audible. Do we quickly vacate the stadium club and get back to our seats? A process that probably would have taken about 10 minutes. and most likely would have meant we were somewhere in the halls in the corridor during Judge's at bat. Or do we sit there and tell ourselves, as I said aloud, he'll never do it in his first at bat, which is what we did and which is what Judge did. He hit his 62nd home run on the second pitch of the game in his very first at bat. I recorded it. I posted it on Instagram and on Twitter. I was smart enough to at least try to get it on video. And there we were in the stadium, but not in our seats. In the stadium, but not looking at the ball field, looking at a television as we watched history with Aaron Judge breaking Roger Maris's record for 62. It's embarrassing. I know. I get it. But I can technically say I was there. Story number one. Tulsi Gabbard, Democratic candidate for president, Democrat congresswoman from Hawaii, in a YouTube post for a brand new show she is launching yesterday, announced she was leaving the Democrat Party. In her video, Gabbard said the Democrat Party had evolved into a party of elitist warmongers. She has fashioned herself over time as anti-establishment. I've had several conversations on and off air with Tulsi Gabbard. She's come to resemble, not lockstep, not doctrinaire, but she's come to resemble voices like Tucker Carlson, Joe Rogan, myself. She has come to represent a voice that, at least in part, was represented by Donald Trump. It's a voice that would have certainly taken umbrage with her endorsement of President Joe Biden in 2020. But a voice that now recognizes that not just the Democratic Party, but quite honestly, the Republican Party. And to be precise, our entire political establishment has become a party of elitist, lying, propagandist warmongers. I'm sure that sounds harsh, hyperbolic, opinionated. I think it's 100% supported by the evidence, the record, and the facts. And I think that what we have seen here with Tulsi Gabbard is someone who has seen the light. And that is something to be applauded, something to be welcomed, something that we hope is the beginning of the rejection of the two-party system. The rejection of not just Democrats, but even of Republicans. The rejection of this corrupt establishment. The rejection of this propaganda. And a return to a government for the people, by the people, and of the people. A few weeks ago here on the Will Cain podcast, we talked about the American culture. In what amounts to the third episode in a trifecta series, laying out American culture, American principles, and America first, I began by talking to you about the existence of an American culture. It's something, this concept that is rejected by popular culture. If you probably poll the average American college student and ask them whether or not there was an American culture, they would laugh and scoff and wave their hand. No, there's not an American culture. We're multicultural. We're constantly evolving. We're constantly changing. And that can all be true. But it's also not just a rejection, but a sense of revulsion towards, as we described it, any type of base to the soup. If America is a melting pot and new ingredients are constantly added, it's a rejection of the idea that there was ever a base, a culture that created, for example, the most prosperous and wealthy and freest society on the history of the planet. It's also the only one that has really successfully endeavored to leave the planet and place a man on the moon. So it has its evidence and has its fruits, the existence of an American culture. In a second episode with you, I set out to, in my estimation, define for you that American culture. I laid out five principles of American culture. They included, one, individualism, an embrace of eternal concepts debated over thousands of years from Socrates through the Magna Carta, enshrined in the American Constitution, that understands that the base political unit is a man, an individual who is imbued with rights. Two, a culture that is founded on faith and family. It's written right there in our documents, and it simply can't be redacted, that we are one nation under God. Our rights are granted by a creator. Everything about American culture from the beginning was about family foundations and family formation. Outside of the individual, this was the unit that we created and passed on the American culture, faith and family. Three, hardworking. American culture is defined by the Protestant work ethic. It's sun up to sundown farmers. It's Jocko Willink setting his alarm at 4 a.m. It's working so that your family can have a better future. It's not exclusive to the United States of America, but it's inherent in the United States of America. Four, adventurism, risk tolerance, pioneers who pushed west, cowboys, wildcatters who drilled holes in the ground, people that sought to be the first at the North Pole and the South Pole, whether or not successful, always at the forefront of exploration and adventure and personal risk. It's part of America. It's part of who we are. It's embodied not just in pioneers, but in entrepreneurs. And that brings us to number five, optimism. America has been defined from the beginning as a place where people look for a better tomorrow. And you can't look for a better tomorrow if you don't believe in a better tomorrow. Everything about the American culture is grounded in the idea that you can, not that you can't, but that you should, not that you shouldn't. You're not held back by your race or your class or your economic conditions or your family heritage, but you can be the one that builds a $1 billion company. You can be the one that starts a homestead. You can be the one that passes on a better life to your grandchildren. America is inherently optimistic. Those five characteristics I laid out for you as my definition of American culture. Today, in the context of talking about Tulsi Gabbard leaving the Democrat Party, I wanted to bring that forward and describe for you a political policy, a perspective then, on how we push forward that American culture into a platform that is of the people, by the people, and for the people. A policy that is America first. You see, when Tulsi Gabbard says she thinks the Democratic Party has become a cabal of elite warmongers, establishment that don't just look down their nose at the average and common American, but to seek to control the minds of the average and common American through propaganda and through lies and through revulsion, it's absolutely true. And most of our political system over the past 50 years has evolved into one run by elitists. And again, that's not just Democrats. That's Republicans. And that's what's so radical about Trumpism. That was what's so radical about the platform and the policies of Donald Trump. I mentioned that Gabbard's voice has joined, if not a chorus, at least a small band, small choir of voices who have attempted to see through not just to the truth, but the will of the people. I see a through line. If you can get past the personality, really of anyone, but if you can get past the personal insults or the style of hair you might not like or the length of the tie or the suntan of former President Donald Trump, if you can get to the policy and the platform, if you can understand or seek to understand Trumpism, you can then begin to see the purpose of seeing the world through the lens of America first. I think that's what's happened with Tulsi Gabbard. Let's take those cultural values, let's take those principles and apply them now to a political platform. And what is exactly America first? I would offer to you at least four policies that should be grounded in America first. First, immigration. Look, America was founded on the idea that it was open to immigrants. You know, give me your tired, give me your poor, give me your huddled masses. America is a story of immigrants, always seeking that optimistic view of a better life. But America, again, was one whose legal process was always controlled, oftentimes by quotas from different places across the world, but also through pace, how quickly and to what extent and to what amount can you integrate people into a new society? And that's key, integration and assimilation. attaching yourself, forming, melting in to the existing culture. Imagine the metaphor. Imagine if give me your tired, give me your poor, give me your huddled masses was simply an open invitation, open borders, legal or illegal. All we are is empathetic. All we are is compassion. Imagine that on a more comprehensible or manageable level. Imagine a home, say in San Francisco, full of extremely empathetic and compassionate individuals. Perhaps they vote Democrat. And they say, we have a real big homeless problem here in San Francisco. Let's do what we can. We open our hearts. Let's open our doors as well. Let's bring everybody in. Well, in the beginning, you have something to invite them to, right? A working home, electricity, water, bills are manageable with a certain number of people living under one roof. There's probably a culture in the house as well. When and when do not we watch television? What do we eat and what do we not eat? What kind of diet do we adhere to? What kind of hours do we keep? What time do we get up? What time do we go to bed? There would be a certain way, a culture, if you will, that that house operated. And then out of compassion or empathy, they say, we need to bring in these people who have a problem, these homeless people on the street. Let's start inviting them in. And not one, let's not just take in one and hopefully integrate them into our life and they would adopt our principles. I don't think it would be the position of the home to adopt his lifestyle. There's a way he became homeless. So we'll bring him in. We'll be compassionate and we'll bring him along. But instead of bringing along one, they bring in two, three, four, 10. Open doors, baby. Come on. Give me your tired. Give me your weak. Give me your huddled masses. Nothing but empathy. Nothing but compassion. What would happen to the house? Well, the water bill would go through the roof, presumably, assuming some personal hygiene habits could be rehabilitated. The water bill would go through the roof. Certainly the food bill would be out of control. I would have to assume that these homeless individuals don't automatically have a productive job and income to contribute to the overhead. So the food bill is going to be out of control with the same amount of revenue coming in. You got a problem. And I'm going to doubt that all of those people you welcome to the house have the same lifestyles and habits. Is anybody a drug user? Anybody smoke cigarettes? Did you smoke cigarettes in the house before? Is secondhand smoke of concern? What about staying up all night? What about playing loud music? All of a sudden, before you know it, the culture inside the house is the same as the culture outside the house. There's no difference between the warmth, the comfort, the hearth of the home, and the corner of the street. There's none. Your empathy and compassion were, well, quite honestly, worthless, because all it did was suck more people, the existing members of the household, into the same living standards and conditions of those outside the house. You just added, in essence, to the homeless population. So goes for immigration. You can't just have a policy of anybody that wants can come in, because you end up reflecting what was left behind. You're not left with the magnet that drew that optimism, that hope for a better life, that risk-taking, that adventuresome, that entrepreneurial spirit to create a better life. You just made this place look like the place that was abandoned. A policy that is America first focuses on Americans first, not just those who wish to become Americans. It's still a policy. It's still a country. It's not an absolute. It's not a zero immigration policy. That's the trick. That's the propaganda. It's not simply xenophobic. It's simply placing the wishes and desires and the lives of those who live in America, who are Americans, over those who seek to be Americans. It's America first. And we ask ourselves every step of the way, is our border secure? Is illegal immigration a problem? Should there be quotas on legal immigration? All of those questions and all of those debates answered with first answering, does it serve Americans' interest first? Second, trade. For far too long, the Republican Party, for example, adopted a libertarian approach to free trade. Rising tide lifts all boats. No tariffs, even when the other party, even when the other side imposes their own asymmetrical tariffs. I give you China. Far too long, we've integrated our economy with a trade partner who doesn't see this as a rising tide lifts all boats, but rather sees it as a zero-sum game. Our trade is a weapon in their war, their cultural war against the United States of America. And while it might have served Americans' interest in getting cheaper plastic electronic goods from China, it doesn't seek doesn't solve Americans' interest in providing purposeful, meaningful, job-filled lives. Trade, whether or not it be with China, or whether or not it be oil and gas with the Middle East versus being energy independent, should be answered with the question of first, whether or not it serves American interest. Third, war. How many times have we gone to war over the last half century without answering that question? In all seriousness, answer that. How many wars have we conducted without first answering whether or not it serves America? Every step of the way. Why do you stay in Afghanistan for 20 years? Does it serve the American interest? Why do we go to war in Iraq at all? Does it serve American interest? What are we doing right now in Ukraine? Does it serve American interest? The fascinating thing about that question is no one tries to answer. In fact, asking the question itself is now evidence you're a Putin apologist, a tool of Russia. Asking what is in American interest is somehow now not in America's interest. It's unpatriotic to worry about Americans. This is the light that Tulsi Gabbard has seen. Fascinating exchange on Twitter where Tulsi Gabbard announced that she was leaving the Democratic Party. In response to that, Bill Kristol, noted neocon, used to run the Weekly Standard, quoted Tulsi Gabbard and said, "Regarding Tulsi Gabbard, makes sense. If you're pro-Assad and pro-Putin, you join today's Republican Party." Comfortably Smug, which is a great account on Twitter, said, "The veteran you're smearing actually served in one of many wars you advocated for from your couch in your living room." Bill Kristol, so comfortable illustrating his patriotism on the back of your blood. He's so comfortable lecturing someone who served in the theater of war about whether or not they're patriotic to America. What a level of absurdity. War, I still think, I have the antiquated notion that war should still be something that is democratically decided by the American people. Not never-ending, you know, authorizations of force. Not expeditions. But rather, the way the founders intended. That if we send Americans off to fight and sacrifice their life, then the American people should have a say and a voice in that choice. There's nothing more fundamental to an American governmental policy than asking whether or not a war would serve America first. That's what's been seen now, I believe, by Tulsi Gabbard. And finally, fourth, how about climate and energy? You know, there's nothing less America first than the Democratic Party's approach to climate change. They are happy to sacrifice America's self-interest at the altar of, I don't know, control of the globe's thermostat, or control over our minds and our lives. I want to share with you some fascinating stats that a friend of mine sent along earlier this week. Let's talk about energy for just one moment. Here are your top countries in the world on energy production, on various categories that produce energy. First of all, let's start with oil and gas. It's the most important. Here's your top oil and gas or oil producing. Let's limit it to oil, then we'll go to gas. First, oil production countries in the world. Number one, Venezuela. 303 billion barrels annually for Venezuela. Second, Saudi Arabia. Third, Canada. Fourth, Iran. Fifth, Iraq. Sixth, Russia. The United States of America comes in ninth. Top 10, though, oil producing country in the world. Now let's go to gas. Number one, Russia. Number two, Iran. Number three, Qatar. Number four, Turkmenistan. And number five, USA. That's oil. There's gas. How about coal? USA one, Russia two. How about rare earth materials? Important in today's computer age. One, China. Two, Vietnam. Three, Brazil and Russia tied. Four, India. USA comes in at six. How about metal? Metal and ore reserves, iron ore. Potash, platinum, gold. South Africa, one. Russia, two. Australia, three. Canada, four. Brazil, five. USA comes in at number eight. If you take overall energy-producing sectors, right, this is what your rankings look like. One, Russia. two USA, three Saudi Arabia, four Canada, five Iran, six China. Whether we like it or not, the world works by energy. And the world fights for energy. Japan's entry into World War II, as we have talked about, was the United States sanctioning their access to oil. At the moment they were sanctioned for oil, they realized we have to attack Pearl Harbor. We have to attack Hawaii. Hitler first, instead of invading Russia, rolled through Romania and the Balkans so he could get access to oil and gas. The entire World War II, besides obviously the ugly parts, very, very ugly parts of the Holocaust, the rolling of tanks through Eastern Europe was about access to resources. Land, minerals, oil and gas for Germany. The world fights over, about, and for energy. So last week when Joe Biden faced the music that his trip to Saudi Arabia would not result in an increase in oil, global oil supply, that instead the OPEC-producing countries, like Saudi Arabia, who seems to be in partnership with Russia here, would constrict the global supply of oil. Rising global prices, which we now know that the Biden administration begged Saudi Arabia to do after the midterm elections, showing you how political these interests are, it sent a message that should have been heard long ago. You should be not dependent upon these global markets. You should be energy independent. Once again, returning to a position and an accomplishment under the idea, under the banner of Trumpism. America first. We have the capability. I just gave you the list. The United States comes in at number two in total. Coal, metal, iron ore, rare earth minerals, oil, and gas. The United States comes in at number two in total reserves. We can and we have been energy independent. And what will we do now that we have put not America first and not even America second, but America damn near dead last in a pursuit of this control policy of climate? We will turn to those who do not like us. You know what? How about this? It isn't even important of whether or not they like us. It matters whether or not Saudi Arabia puts Saudi Arabia first, and Russia puts Russia first, and China puts China first, because of course they do, because everyone does. You put your faith, your God, you put yourself, you put your family first, then you put your country, and only then do you get the priorities that are far away. There was an interesting heat map I saw recently of where your values lie and where you find your virtue. And it was in direct opposite those that see themselves as conservative and those that see themselves as Democrat. The conservatives see all of their virtue and all of their priorities close to home. Family, church, community. And vote that way. Democrats find their virtue and their focus and their priorities far away. Ukrainians, Syrians, you know, people that don't live in their community. And they find their virtue in those faraway places. And, you know, it's not that one is 100% right and the other is 100% wrong. Like most things in life that nobody wants to hear about, but it's the Goldilocks zone that is right. Moderation. I think, as you can tell by my biases and leanings, of which I'm honest, it's not a 50-50 split. I think you should heavily lean towards community, faith, family, and neighbors. But it doesn't mean you ignore the world around you or the world far away. And it certainly shouldn't be an 80-20, a 70-30 split that I care more about Ukrainians than I do Americans. It's America first. And for that matter, for me, often, I want a common culture and I want America that we all love together. But then from there, honestly, it's community first. It's my family before that. And then it should be your God before even that. It's a matter of priorities. And when we're talking about national politics, federal elections, presidencies, platforms for a party, why shouldn't it be America first? I have laid out for you why I think it should be America first, our values. I would love to hear the argument about why it shouldn't be America first. For once, I would like to hear it laid out. No name calling, no Putin apologists, no ad hominem, you're a racist and transphobe, no silence and censorship, no propaganda and paid attacks on my mind, but a true persuasive argument. Why shouldn't we be America first? Bravo to Tulsi Gabbard for leaving the Democratic Party. Let's be clear, it doesn't mean. I don't think she would say it, and I'm looking to see if Tulsi Gabbard will be here on the Will Cain podcast in the very soon. I don't think it should be, and I don't think it is that she is now a member of the Republican Party, but an independent voice interested in the truth, not in propaganda, and putting the interest of the people ahead of the elites. There are those that say she's opportunistic. There are those that say she's found salvation. I say this. Maybe she, like others, maybe like some of you, maybe like me, maybe like some other big voices, have found a new path. We won't be trapped by a two-party system run by elites, by the establishment, but a new path that places first the needs, desires, and the lives of Americans.
All right, we're going to step aside here for just a moment. Stay tuned.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Story number two. Will's weekly quarterback depth chart plus, one that you will hear, give it about 5 years. On Saturday, I told you I had a big time. Went out with my friends Pete Hegseth and Rick Reichmuth. Went to Hill Country Barbecue, Texas-style barbecue in Midtown Manhattan, to watch Texas versus Oklahoma. We had a big time, 6 hours. And at our age, that's a problem. 6 hours of big time means at least 2 days of dragon time. I don't mean like fire-breathing dragon, although one could argue there is something to be said there in terms of an analogy, but rather dragon-ass dragon for a couple of days. I tried to punish myself out of it yesterday, a lot of sweat, hard workout. All that means today is I'm even more drained. But it was a good time with the fellas. And watching Texas smoke Oklahoma 49-0, in which I think also will give you a glimpse of the future. Let's get to the future by giving you a glimpse of the present. Here is Will's weekly quarterback depth chart. At number five, a moment in time, a picture. I think you're going to have trouble telling me right now that Geno Smith of the Seattle Seahawks is not a top five quarterback. Hey, I have Geno Smith on one of my fantasy teams. I need to come clean with you about something. The Fox and Friends Fantasy Football League is a complete and utter disaster. It's a catastrophe. I'm telling you right now, it's the most embarrassing fantasy football season in my life. I'm 0-5. I'm just here because that's what I'm supposed to be, transparent and honest with you. I'm 0-5. I hosted a show on fantasy football for ESPN. And by the way, my two producers who fancy themselves sports fans, guess what their record is? 0-5. The Will Cain podcast right here is a horrendous place for you to turn for fantasy football. Last night, Monday Night Football, I was beating Rachel Campos Duffy by 50 points. She only had two players to go. Chiefs taking on the Raiders. She had Josh Jacobs running back for the Raiders, and she had Travis Kelce tied in for the Kansas City Chiefs. Kelce scored 4 touchdowns. She beat me. I was way up. I'm like the third highest scoring team in the league this week. And somehow I still get a loss. It's awful, man. It's embarrassing. I don't have the standings in front of me right now. I think Todd Pyro is still at the top. Carly Shimkus, the Fox and Friends first crew, doing very well. 0-5 is a hole that you cannot dig yourself out of. 14 teams in this league. 6 make it to the playoffs. I don't think I can make my way back. Even with Geno Smith, who's been very good with the Seattle Seahawks, even though he's 2-3. 113 passer rating. And Geno Smith represents a class of quarterback that has really taken over the NFL this year, and that's the quarterback that can run. All of these top five quarterbacks can run, and 4 of them really do. At number 4, Los Angeles Chargers quarterback Justin Herbert. Another big win over the Cleveland Browns. At number 3, Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Jalen Hurts. I mean, as big a threat on the ground as he is through the air. We're going to find out this week, because the Eagles take on the Cowboys in Sunday Night Football, and this Cowboys defense is elite. We're going to soon turn the page on the Cooper Rush era and go to Dak Prescott. We will and we should. There's not a single thing that Rush does better than Prescott. But why he's winning, smart game plan, don't try to do too much, and let what is an elite defense win the game. Can't wait to see what an elite defense, yes, led by Micah Parsons, does against Jalen Hurts. Number two, Patrick Mahomes. Can you throw a touchdown, please, to somebody besides Kelsey, at least when I'm playing Rachel Campos Duffy? And number one, the best quarterback in the league, a guy that absolutely runs and throws it of equal competency, Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen. Now back to Texas-Oklahoma for one moment. Texas quarterback Quinn Ewers is the real deal. He's a dude. I'm telling you, if he hadn't been hurt against Alabama, he'd be the leading contender for Heisman. Fact. And when he's eligible, I think it's 2 years from now, he'll be a top five pick in the NFL draft. And I'm going to tell you something else. After that, and I'm out on my limb here now, he's going to be a top quarterback in the NFL. I know. Homer, burnt orange glasses. I'm serious. He's going to be a top quarterback in the NFL. I don't know if you had a chance to watch, and I'm not telling you Oklahoma's any great shakes, but you can see arm talent when you see it. The ease with which he flicks a ball 50 yards, the accuracy he threads it through two or three dudes, his mobility might be the one thing that hurts him because he's not huge and he's already been injured once. This dude, I know what this is going to sound like. He is Patrick Mahomes-esque. Not exactly the same, but in that category. Like, does amazing things with his arm, effortlessly. I did a sports podcast earlier this week with Jason McIntyre, Straight Fire Podcast. You can go check it out. And he was blown away by me saying this because he was like, Arch Manning, let me tell you something. Arch Manning, who's committed to Texas, will sit behind Quinn Ewers until Quinn Ewers is done. Ewers was a bigger prospect. That's hard for people to know because he doesn't have the last name Manning. He was a bigger high school football recruit and prospect than Manning. And Manning's the top quarterback in his class, but Ewers was bigger. Like, higher ratings by all the recruiting services. Everybody saw it. And he's going to be a program changer for Texas. And to be able to go from Ewers to Manning, I mean, you're talking about what? That's 5-6 years of sustainable national championship level competitiveness. I know what it all sounds like, and Texas is back. LOLs, ROFL. But I'm serious. With Quinn Ewers, Texas is back. Texas would be undefeated. He'd be a Heisman candidate. He's going to be a Heisman candidate. He's going to be a top five pick in the NFL draft at some point. And he's going to be better than Trevor Lawrence. He's going to be one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. Book it. Book it right now.
Don't go anywhere. More of the Will Cain podcast right after this.
Story number three. The attack on your mind. Let me lay out for you exactly how much you have been subjected to propaganda and ask you, does anyone in your personal life persuade you or stand on truth or even have a good argument if their only response is silence and lies? You know well by now that you've been subjected to a great amount of censorship over the last couple of years. You know by now how much information has been deprived from your eyes, your ears, from your consciousness. You know about Hunter Biden. You know about COVID protocols with masks. You know about vaccine efficacy. You know every step of the way when it came to stories about Donald Trump through the election cycle or the prior 5 years, how you were not given full stories. You know that you've been subject to propaganda. Do you know the extent? Here's stories from this week. The Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control, according to Freedom of Information requests and legal filings by Judicial Watch, ran an extensive and elaborate propaganda campaign that employed screenwriters, comedians, influencers, and church leaders for paid promotion for COVID-19 vaccines to the masses. Judicial Watch found these documents and put out a press release entitled Judicial Watch announced today that it received 249 pages of records from the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, detailing the extensive media plans for a propaganda campaign to push the COVID-19 vaccine. One document in the released records was entitled Public Education Plan, April 19th through May 31st, 2021. And here are the bullet point features of this propaganda campaign. Now, this is fascinating. Vaccine one, vaccine engagement package to all entertainment, talent, and management agencies. So anybody in entertainment, most people in entertainment, including myself, which includes the news industry, have agencies, an agent who helps negotiate our contracts. And you've heard some of the biggest ones, CAA, IMG, William Morris, Endeavor. So reaching out to talent and management agencies to find projects with quote unquote talent to push the vaccine. Engagement package to all media companies. This is number two, and show producers. Now go directly to the production companies and the ABC Disneys of the world. Outreach to major culture event producers. I'm not sure exactly what a major culture event producer is, but somebody at Live Nation, perhaps, big concerts, concerts in Central Park. Three, produce HHS question and answer videos featuring local black doctors discussing the vaccines and how they work and why the public should get vaccinated. Focus on the black community through black doctors. Five, request that Tom Brady create a video with his parents encouraging vaccination. This is your government's propaganda campaign to reach your mind. Employ Tom Brady. Create custom partnerships, six, with social media platforms with algorithms to hit the audience. Seven, launch Hollywood comedy writers, video content. Seven, work with YouTube on an original special about vaccination to young people. Next, work with Instagram to produce a series about vaccines for Instagram and its 387 million followers. Next, request major TikTok, Snapchat, and Instagram influencers create videos of themselves being vaccinated. Next, reach out to the Christian Broadcasting Network. Request major live TV entertainment shows feature hosts being vaccinated on the air. Example, the host of The Voice. That's not my example. That's the example provided in the bullet point from Judicial Watch. How many of those did you see in those years? How many newscasters, entertainment people, people on the internet did you see getting the shot? They just had one last week with Dr. Fauci, getting one with Stephen Colbert. Next, request that TV morning and daytime talk shows feature special vaccination reunion moments with everyday Americans. Next, go to Catholic newspapers and newsletters. Listen to this one. Place a trusted messenger on the Joe Rogan Show and Barstool Sports to promote vaccination. Send a propagandist to the Joe Rogan Show. I bet they failed. And to Barstool Sports to promote vaccination. And finally, of interest, particularly perhaps to the Will Cain Show audience, work with the NFL, NASCAR, Major League Baseball, CMA, to request they create content with their talent and release through their broadcast and social channels. This was a paid government propaganda campaign through every element of our culture to get you vaccinated. Not just lay out a case. I'll just tell you why it's in your best interest. No, that stuff was shut down as recently as this week, as we talked about in the last episode of the Will Cain podcast, where Florida Surgeon General Joseph Lodipo has now put out a study saying that young men under the age of 40 should not, in a risk reward analysis, get the COVID-19 booster because of increased risk of cardiac incidences, because of myocarditis. No, no, the Florida Surgeon General was disappeared in that message from the internet, Twitter. Got him off, put that message away, then let him back on. I guess it was a slap on the wrist. And of course, he was met with articles from, I don't know, Newsweek and whatever else saying that he's an idiot. Nothing more. He's an idiot. Even though his policies reflect those of the UK, Denmark, Norway, Australia, increasingly. People who are countries who are look or medical professionals who are looking at the risk reward. And acknowledging that there are risks to the COVID-19 vaccine, but not your government, who has a full-on attack on your mind, a full-on assault to propagandize your mind. And quickly, to perhaps attack your bank account. This past weekend, PayPal uploaded a new authorization or use agreement. If you use PayPal, you submit to this. It said, if you commit to producing or publishing misinformation, they can take from your account $2,500. You know how PayPal works. You can essentially maintain an account like a bank. They can just dock you $2,500. Why? Misinformation. What's that? Don't know. Who decides? Don't know. Somebody at PayPal? Maybe. Why $2,500? Don't know. Should hurt. How ugly. How crazy. And what a fortune teller this policy is. PayPal apologized, took it down, by the way. Said it was a mistake. I don't even know how it's a mistake. How could that be a mistake? You drafted it. Did a rogue employee draft it and upload it? Should it not have been uploaded yet? Was it a mistake because you saw the immediate backlash? PayPal stock down on Monday 6%. People I know people closing their PayPal accounts. How did you think you had this right, this ability? How did you think you had this consumer equity? Well, I think I know, because you're fortune tellers. You just got a little ahead of yourselves. We're headed there. Banks will lend to you based upon the government's ESG rating or their social credit score for you guys out there. You know what that is, right? You're going to be, oh yeah, like your credit score and how well you pay your bills. You're going to have one. What's your carbon footprint like? You know, have you tweeted anything virtuous? Who'd you donate to? You'll have a social credit score. It's coming. They already have it in China. They're definitely toying with it here. They're already doing it on Wall Street with ESG ratings, environmental, social, and governance funds. Oh, they're judging your life very soon. And I guess your brain activity. And I guess what you say. And they're going to make you fewer loans if they don't like it. It's coming, unless we really put our foot down. They're going to take away your $2,500, and that'll be nothing. And it'll be done by shadowy figures like, who the hell at PayPal? Probably somebody behind that curtain. Publishing things like we just heard from Judicial Watch in the full-on attack on your bank account, but really, honestly, more important, your mind. Maybe we all can take a new path that might be pioneered in an example by someone like Tulsi Gabbard. There you go. That's the Will Cain podcast on this Wednesday. If you feel it so worthy, please leave it a comment. I read all your comments on Apple the other day. Leave a comment. On YouTube, I read all your comments underneath the videos. Great, great comments. I really appreciate them under our interview with Tucker Carlson. Go check them out yourself. Go leave one. I will check it out. Leave us a rating. Leave us a thumbs up wherever you're listening to this podcast right now. I will appreciate it, and I'll see you next time.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.